In tech we trust. Sure about.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode 95 of In Tech We Trust. I think we've got a great show for you. I'm host Mark Farley, and my co-hosts this week are Lauren Malhoit.
Hey, all right. Mark.
All right. Hey, Lauren. And Yadine Porter de Leon.
Hello, America, and the rest of the world.
Otherwise known as the dude.
I don't think that's a thing.
It's been done. Yeah.
Mark's trying to start it.
I want everyone to call you the dude, Yadine.
Yadine abides.
Yeah, you're abiding today. Yeah, same here. Hey, so we'll go through the agenda really quickly and then dive into stuff. We can't do a show this week without talking a little bit about Pokemon Go, so we'll spend a little bit of time on it, but not too much. And then we're going to get into the meat of the show, which is the government relationship to technology, especially social media. Last week, as you're probably well aware, there was a coup in Turkey. They were trying to shut down social media and communications in Turkey. But there's a bunch of things also about data privacy. Can you communicate privately? Can governments, get in and have access to that information? Can large companies try to block it? It was a really interesting week, and these things are coming to a head. There's a lot to discuss around there. We're going to talk about the ARM sale, the sale of ARM to SoftBank in Japan is a really big deal. Now, I can't keep this straight. Was it 24 billion or 36 billion? I mean, was it pound? Does anybody remember what the currency level was?
It was about 34.4 billion, I believe. Was that the number?
There were actually conflicting reports, so I don't know that we should commit to a number, because I saw 24 billion and then I saw 32 billion. So yeah, it's somewhere between 20 and 40.
$100 billion.
I thought it was 24 million or billion, million 24 billion. Billion pounds sterling.
Oh, maybe it's 24 billion pounds. That wouldn't be 32 billion though. I'm not great at currency.
I know, but that's the thing, right? The currency's been going crazy. So, right. We probably won't talk about that, but we'll talk about the deal. We'll talk about the technology. We'll talk a little bit about how the large sites are really starting to hoard the data and their access to the data. The big internet sites, Google, Facebook and whatnot, used to have APIs to try to do stuff with people's data in there. Can you still get access to that data the way you might want to or are accustomed to? Talk a little bit about that. We're going to talk about how AT&T is planning to scale up bandwidth through the use of drones. Then, something that's a little more lighthearted, summertime, what if you come out to the San Francisco Bay Area? What else are you going to do? Maybe visit some tech companies. We'll talk about tech tourism. IBM posted numbers this week. We'll just have a little bit to say about that. And then we're going to have a hot or not, and we're going to keep that as a surprise because we think it's really interesting. All right. Let's go. What do you say?
Let's do this.
Let's get started.
Let's do this thing. Yeah. Okay. Pokemon Go. Everybody knows that people all over the place are playing. People all over the place are having a hard time getting on. Doesn't look like the application's scaling particularly well. Then it comes out that, who was it, the company that is doing this for Nintendo, Niantic or something? Do you guys remember the name of the company?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it's Niantic.
Yeah, they spun out from Google, and it's highly likely that that's running on Google's cloud, and that Google's cloud is... Something about that is not working because people can't get on and play, And when my son can't get on and play Pokemon Go, we got a problem here. Google, Nintendo.
Yeah, I think we're branding this as a civil rights issue right now.
That's right. That's right.
Pokemon Go is now one of those.
What have you guys heard about this? Is this an app problem? Is it a Google Cloud problem? What's going on here?
It sounds like there's a lot of speculation right now, but it's definitely a scale-out issue. And they obviously, I don't think anyone actually predicted they were going to get the demand that they got. And it's no surprise that there's some lag.
Right, we're over like $9 billion in revenue right now for Nintendo, right? Like, who would have thought that was going to happen in 2016?
Yeah, and like they doubled their market cap or something, in the last 3 weeks or something like that, right? It's some insane,
oh, yeah.
Some insane thing. But the fact is, the app didn't scale.
I think it's a kind of an old school problem, you know, something that we used to experience in the 80s and 90s where, you know, now you expect things to be a little more prepared. And I just think, like Yadin said, they just were not prepared for the amount of people that would take this on.
But do you think that says anything at all about the ability of Kubernetes to scale within the Google Cloud? I mean, is there an orchestration issue that they've got? Is it just really that it was so massive, it wouldn't matter if you had the best orchestration on earth? Or is it a case where maybe if they had run it on Amazon, everything would have been okay?
Or is it a case where they didn't pay enough to have it scale? I mean, couldn't that also be an issue?
Yeah, that actually, I think, is along the correct line of thinking, because a lot of people think this stuff happens automatically, but there's always a needle that you thread, a balance between costs and what you're trying to accomplish and what you predict the demand is going to be. So there's always some underlying assumptions you make anytime you create any quote unquote scale out system. We do our work, the company I work at on AWS, but we still, when we do something, it scales out, but not automagically. You actually have to make, unless you want to spend $1 billion a day, you're actually going to have to make some decisions about how much you want to start with and what the kind of incremental increases you're going to make and how those are going to get put into the system. It just doesn't, magically scale out to infinity. You have to put caps on it, limits on it. You have to make decisions when you're configuring these.
Maybe that's where we need to have more automation, is just the cost. If we can figure out automatically how much money we're making from this application, then somehow go through ITSM models or something and have it automatically pay. I'm not the application developer or anything, but that could be an interesting next step in automation.
Well, it's interesting too that a lot of people seem to have patience with the outages. I sort of said tongue in cheek that, people were complaining about not being able to log in. It's an issue if my son can't get in. But I mean, if you look at just about any other service, if they had the kind of outages accessing it that they've had with Pokemon Go, people would be really up in arms. But because it's just a game, or maybe it's just because mostly kids play it, it's not that big a deal.
I was actually listening to a podcast about this very same topic, and Facebook used to crash their servers on purpose just to gather statistics on how much patience users would have. And they figured out no one cared that it crashed. I mean, of course, they were probably frustrated, but it didn't stop anyone from using it.
Yeah, when you have that level of stickiness like Facebook or Pokemon has, you don't have to worry about these. And also, these are early days and people have a lot more tolerance. I just want to challenge one statement you made, Mark, and I don't think it's mostly kids playing this. I think it's mostly people over the age of 18 playing this game.
Well, my son's 22, yeah.
Judging from Cisco Live, it definitely was not mostly kids.
So let's talk about that. I mean, you were at Cisco Live, and were a lot of people at Cisco Live playing Pokemon Go?
Oh, yeah. And, we were in Vegas, too. So, I mean, you just see people all around the casinos trying to capture these Pokemon or whatever they are, monsters, whatever. And,
Oh, are Pokemon at casinos that are hanging out by the slots?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They were everywhere.
The casinos must hate this, right? If people are distracted from gambling and going after Pokemon. Oof.
Yeah, I wonder.
Yeah, actually, yeah. I was at an establishment, a restaurant yesterday. I walked in, and the maitre d', the first thing they said was, like, just to let you know, this is a Pokemon-free zone. That was the first thing they said to me.
Were you, like, looking at your phone when they said that to you?
No, it was just like, it was like a badge of honor. Like, look, just let you know that you'll have a nice, peaceful experience here at this place, because there are no Pokemon.
This is actually what brings us to the civil rights issue.
Yeah, there we go.
Pokemon aren't allowed in.
Yeah, Pokemon aren't allowed in. Yeah, so great transition, Lauren. Let's move to the next one, which is, relationship between governments and the systems, the games, the social media that we use. Because last week in Turkey, the military sprung a coup to oust their prime minister, Erdogan, over concerns that he was becoming a little bit leaning towards more radical Islamic stance, and the military was concerned about that, apparently, and they tried to stage a coup. And in the process of this, and it was unsuccessful, and in the process of this, access to social media was shut down. And as far as I know, access to the internet still stayed up, but it was social media that was shut down. And it's not clear to me who did the shutting down, if it was the presidential government that was defending itself from the coup, or it was the military that was making the attack. Do either of you guys know what this was?
My understanding was it was the government. I didn't see any updates to the stories. But it seemed like in order to pull something like this off, it would have to be the government and not the military. But I thought it was really interesting that that there was lots of advice being given to the people of Turkey on how to contact the outside world. I know like the State Department's travel Twitter handle was tweeting out how to contact people there, and also even the author of some articles were giving advice to the Turkish people on how to use, like Tor browsers or VPNs in order to circumvent the social media block.
I know I had a friend who was reposting her friend who lives in Turkey's Facebook posts. So I don't know if this guy, was using VPN or I don't know that Facebook actually ever got taken over either. When I read the article, I saw Twitter, I saw some other media sites, but I can't say for sure that Facebook technically did.
So were they just trying to block access to the URLs? Is that what's going on? I mean, there's a lot of other ways that people can communicate, although, we sort of get lazy and we don't necessarily find them. Could you do Google search and look for people's blog sites? So you know that? I should have looked at this, but I didn't. There's got to be a thousand ways to circumvent something like that.
I imagine if they're recommending Tor browsers and VPNs that it must have been some sort of URL DNS type of situation. But yeah, I can't say for sure either. It didn't say in the articles that I read. So
related to this is a bill or a law that's been moving through the UK. I don't know what the status of this is, but the idea of the law is that they want to make it illegal to have end-to-end encryption, which means that the government wants to be able to snoop into any communication that is going on within the UK. And, that's interesting. In one hand, you've got the Turkey government, which is, not allowing people to communicate. And the other one in the UK, they're saying you communicate as much as you want. We just want to have access to it. It's similar to the thinking here in the U.S. also. The U.S. Senate wants to make sure that the FBI, it's close. I said that wrong. The U.S. Senate came within one vote of approving a bill that would have given the FBI the right to search anybody's browser history without a warrant. So these things are kind of close. The FBI wants to be able to look. The British government wants to be able to snoop.
Well, and the Apple phone debacle too.
Yeah, the Apple phone debacle also, right? The fact that, the FBI government wanted to, Apple to give up rights to crack the stuff, so they could access the phone records of the terrorists down in San Bernardino. Do you guys have any thoughts, opinions, news, insights into this? Yadin?
Well, I thought it was really interesting that this was one of the first pieces of legislation that the UK government put in place after they left or decided they were going to leave the European Union, because this completely flies in the face of the EU protection and data protection acts that actually exist. And it's basically saying we don't want any safe places for terrorists. But, it's an extremely small subset of the number of users that are going to get snooped are actually terrorists. It's sort of the straw man that the government's put up to say we want to see everything. And in this case, they want to be able to say to any company, no matter who you are, you remove your encryption, period. We're the government. You'd have to remove your encryption. We need to be able to see whatever communication is happening on your platform. Now, I see one side of that, whereas if you have specific reason to believe that XYZ is going on, yes, there may be a case for that. But the problem is that's not really what this is all about. It's really about helping them for the whole swath of investigatory requests to do a whole host of different things, not just go for terrorists.
Yeah, so I just want to read a quote from the article I read real quick and then ask a question here. So the quote is, pressed a second time by Harris to clarify whether the bill sets up an expectation that CSPs be required to avoid using end-to-end encryption for future services, Howe again gave no definitive answer. So you're telling me that a cloud service provider is not going to have end-to-end encryption. And we're not even talking about taking the encryption away later. We're talking about from the get-go. How is that even a possibility or something that we want to consider?
Yeah, I don't know how a bank would operate.
Exactly. If any financial...
Have any trusted login or connection, SAML, OAuth, any of that stuff would, you know, even exist. There can't be trust, you know, between two entities without encryption. That's what's, I think, the foundation of a lot of what we do today, transactionally, is based on the fact that we've got end-to-end encryption in place. Otherwise, there would be no trust.
Well, that was an interesting point of the whole Brexit thing that came out was, you know, the fact that if the UK, you know, when the UK leaves the EU, then the you'll probably see much stronger privacy laws enacted across the EU without the UK in there trying to counterbalance what everybody else wants to do to ensure privacy. Now, to go along with that, we've had recently, the last week, we've had several U.S. companies working with countries in the EU to strengthen encryption and strengthen communications privacies. Yadin, what are you seeing here?
Well, here it's really a bunch of cloud companies like Amazon, Apple, Facebook, Twitter. They're backing a bill called the International Communications Privacy Act. And this is basically to address an out-of-date law that was from 1986, which does not at all provide the correct governance over data stored that passes through U.S. companies and overseas, or overseas data that passes through the U.S. And so I think this is really interesting because the EU... Safe Harbor Act was struck down because U.S. couldn't provide the level of assurance to the European Union that we're actually handling Europeans' data appropriately because the NSA or any other U.S. entities could basically reach their hand into, you know, any of these databases or data stores and be able to, you know, look and view it whenever they wanted to. And so that was revoked. And I think this is a way in which to start to approach that in a common sense way. So that we could look at data that, you know, from overseas, it's passing to the U.S. and vice versa.
Yeah, wasn't there just a case in Ireland with somebody there where Microsoft was involved not giving up their data? And can you shed a little light on that and how it relates to this?
Well, there was a case in which a government wanted to get, you know, its hands on data concerning a non-U.S. national data that was stored that passed through U.S. companies' property overseas. So this is a U.S. company's property that's overseas, and that data passed through it. And I think that's sort of a primary use case. If you have individuals, you know, out of the United States, they're, you know, they're not U.S. citizens, but data that is concerning them is passing through, let's say, for example, U.S. property, you know, our data center, but it's located in, let's say, Germany, and being able to access it, you know, in a specific way. But I think that's, I think that's a slippery slope. You know, there was, I think the one you're referring to is the Irish warrant case, brought by Microsoft, against the U.S. government. And that, this is one of the reasons why, you know, they had this is because the courts ruled that the feds could not use the 1986 Stored Communication Act law, to retrieve the message on a Microsoft server that was in Dublin.
Okay, so let's spin this around a little bit and look at, you know, the kind of privacy protection we get or not from the companies whose technology we use, you know, for instance, Google and Facebook in particular. So a lot of people have been using the data that's stored in both Google and Facebook, and they've been using the APIs to access it and do a certain amount of data mining on what those companies have and what those companies know about all of us. Well, it turns out that it looks like both Google and Facebook are gradually making it more difficult for outside entities to mine their data to get information. It's fine if Google wants to do that. It's fine if Facebook wants to do that. But it's not so fine anymore if everybody else wants to do it. So they obviously see it as important data that helps them run their business to drive advertising revenue or something else. And that came to light lately where developers are starting to complain about that. Lauren, do you have a perspective on what's going on here? Is this fair play? Is it foul play? You know, are we better off or worse off for it? Or what do you think?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, whether we're better or worse off for it as, you know, the developers or the other citizens that don't work for these companies, these are private companies, so I feel like they have every right to close off the data. Maybe there's some other loophole I'm not thinking of. Certainly, I think the information could be helpful. I mean, we talked recently about finding out if you have cancer because of certain Bing searches you did, you know. That information could certainly be useful, but I don't think the company should be required to give it to us either, even though they have in the past and they're closing it down more and more. Yeah, I have to say it's a private company and they can do what they want.
Dean, you have an angle?
Yeah, I'm actually interested in some of the other opinions that are coming out about this. And I think it's nice when you're a developer and you have a large data set to consume and you have easy access to that via an API. But I was reading an interesting Harvard Business Review article, which talks about how there's actually very little of that hyped big data value that people were, you know, expecting. It really has not come to fruition. And a lot of people are actually going to be able to create analytics-generated insights through, you know, data replication in ways. And I don't know the details exactly of how this is taking place, but it's really fascinating to me how people are actually creating their own large data sets without having to tap into like a Facebook and a Google. And this is something that I'm wanting to dig into more and more. But I don't think the big data that, you know, that Google and Facebook have right now are going to be the same sort of barrier to entry and differentiator that they currently are, say 5 to 10 years from now. You're actually going to be seeing a different landscape.
Very interesting. Hey, so let's change the topic completely now and look at mergers, acquisitions, that kind of thing. The big bomb that hit this week was that ARM, or ARM, is going to be acquired by SoftBank in Japan. ARM designs chips, fabless company that designs chips that are used all over the place, and selling to SoftBank. So a British sale to a Japanese technology company. And as far as I can tell, SoftBank's a company that's never been in the chip business before. So Lauren, what do you know about ARM? What do they make? What do they sell? How do people use their stuff?
Well, I think you kind of hit it. You know, ARM is a chip maker and they are big in the mobile now, right? I think the mobile is important, but I think SoftBank bought it for the IoT perspective as that continues to grow. I think we'll see not only IoT in our mobile devices, but in, you know, other IoT widgets that might exist now or in the future. So I think that's the big play here. It's interesting, especially, you know, we've already mentioned Brexit once, but along those lines, then to have a big chip maker be bought by Japan, taken out of England, you know, I think that's an interesting story too, though I'm not the guru or the expert on that end, but it's an interesting thing and maybe sad for England, basically, but, you know, good for my stock that I bought 6 years ago.
Oh, you
right, you're rolling right, it now, aren't right. You?
You bought ARM stock.
I did. Yeah, like 6 years ago, just kept hearing a lot about it, and it was even kind of competing with Intel and the likes for a little while. Not, you know, not a major competitor, obviously, not a major market share, but it just seemed like mobile was mobile was already huge, and it looked like things were going that way, so I went
no,
for
but
it.
that's the point, though, right, Lauren, is that actually ARM was competing very well in mobile against Intel, yeah, which has a very small footprint in mobile, you know, ARM licensing its technology to Qualcomm,
exactly.
And that's basically their business model, right? They license their designs to other companies, right?
Yeah, the Qualcomm thing, I think, is what actually got me 6 years ago. I kept looking at Qualcomm and, you know, then got into ARM a little bit.
Yeah, so do you know what the future of ARM is? Have you looked at what the roadmap is like?
Nope. No, I honestly don't know. You know, as far as I think it's the IoT stuff, but I don't have any specifics around that either.
Yeah, so Yadin, what's your take on this?
Well, I've always been interested in the ARM holdings because they were, I mean, basically the big themes, you know, for the last decade was, you know, mobile, social, and cloud. And ARM was really in that mobile niche, like you guys had pointed out. And I had actually, I'd owned the stock, I think, a little while ago. I sold it a while ago. But I'm hoping Lauren's rung the register now because I think the ARM stock road is done. And I think you can cash in and go buy that place in the Cayman Islands, Lauren.
Yeah, it's already bought. on my 25 shares. The house.
Yeah. You should be a venture capitalist, Lauren.
Well, I'm thinking about starting my own company now that I can afford to, just based on this one windfall here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Be a seed investor. Right. Got to pay it forward, you know?
I can't afford to be an angel investor, much less a VC. So,
well, I think one of the ways you could spend it was trying to figure out how to scale up a bandwidth out in the wild, like AT&T is trying to do, obviously. They're looking at using drones.
Check out that segue.
That wasn't that a great segue. Yeah, that's better than blimps, man. AT&T wants to use drones for bandwidth. I mean, this is like, didn't Facebook want to use blimps or something like that? Or what was
that? Was Google. They wanted to use balloons.
Oh, Google wanted to use balloons. So now AT&T wants to use drones. I mean, what's for what and when and why and where? Yadin, what's up?
They want to scale out in live event, you know, areas where you, let's say, for example, and we've all probably experienced this, you've got a large event where there's 10, 20, 30,000 people, like a ball game, football, baseball, you know, or I've experienced this, a very large graduation. And you try and get a signal, and it's basically 30,000 people trying to ping two cell towers to get LTE, and the data backhaul just absolutely pukes under those circumstances. And AT&T wants to actually put drones up in the sky, give people a little bit more bandwidth. I'm for that.
So do you think they'll fly them the whole time, or will they try to land them someplace where they got good line of sight, vision, and whatnot?
I imagine flying. I think they're just going to stay up. I think if it's just going to be event-based, like if it's just going to be like at a ball game, I imagine they'll probably hang up in the sky for the 2 to 3 hours that extra bandwidth is needed. But I don't know who's going to pay for that. Either it's going to be the ballpark or it's going to be the subscribers, and only AT&T people are going to get this, and you know, Verizon people are just out of luck. I'd be interested to see how this shakes out.
Yeah, but I mean, how long will the drone stay in flight, you know, with its battery? You know, 5, 10 minutes?
Oh, no, these drones could stay up a long time. I was watching the 4th of July, and just gives you a sense of, you know, how this generation experiences different 4th of Julys. I'm there watching the fireworks up on the hill. I'm watching 3 different fireworks shows going on at the same time because I'm up on this mountain. And then my daughter goes, "What's that? Is that a firework?" It's like this blinking light. I'm like, "Nope, that's a drone just filming the fireworks." Not part of my childhood memories. Drones on the 4th of July. Yeah. But it was there for probably a good 2 hours or something, or whatever, an hour and a half, however long we were there.
It can't be the same drone.
Yeah.
You really? I mean, I don't know anybody that can fly a drone for an hour. Is that doable?
Oh, yeah, the U.S. government can fly drones for many hours.
Well, those are different drones. The bomb drones are a lot bigger, and they don't use electricity, do they? I don't know. They don't. They're powered by a different kind of engine to carry fuel. Right. I mean, that's the problem with drones, right? Is how long can you fly for the weight of the battery that you've got? Right. So if you're trying to figure out how to make bandwidth work for, say, a Super Bowl, and you figure that you're going to fly maybe 25, you know, drone spots up there. I mean, think of the logistics of that. If you had to swap those drones out, say, every 20 minutes, 30 minutes, right? You have to get the new ones up there, the old ones out, switch everything over. And there's a lot of technology involved.
Yeah. They're going to figure it out so they can, I can do Pokemon Go while I'm at the ball game.
That's right. That's right. Hey, Lauren, do you know if Cisco's working on drone networking?
No comment.
There we go. Right. A substantiated no comment.
All right. Drone brought to you by Cisco.
Hey, so one of the things that is going on, right, is people want to come out to the Bay Area. It's a wonderful place to take a vacation. We've got great weather, great climate, and people want to go to tech companies for some reason or another. Lauren, do you have people showing up at Cisco to come and, you know, see what Cisco's about?
I've definitely seen, I mean, we have a huge campus, right? And Cisco is like, right, you know, there's a big Cisco sign, kind of like Facebook, Google, whatever, outside of most of our buildings. And I do see people all the time taking pictures there. I assume they were like employees that maybe just started or something, but it does make sense that they were probably just tourists.
When you come out here with people that aren't in tech, do you ever take them to show them the companies?
No. I mean, I always tell people, I'm like, San Jose is not pretty. Like, it's not a pretty place to visit. It's cool, I guess.
My heart's broken.
Yeah, for like a half a day, it's cool, I guess, to like go and see all these big names that you don't see, let's say, in the Midwest where I live and places like that. So it's cool for about, you know, an hour. And then you're like, okay, what do we do now?
Yeah, well, You and Yadin are a little bit different that way. Yadin is like the uber hyped out on tech geek. I mean, Yadin, when people come out, do you take them to see Facebook, Google, these places?
Well, you know, it's funny because we have an office in India, and when the guys come from India, they're like, oh, you've been to the Google campus? What is it like? And they want to go. And there's this fascination because there's this, everyone's really excited about these companies, and there's just been this brand that they've created. And it's different than like, you know, nobody's going to, you know, go and, you know, visit the Gap headquarters like, whoa, I'm in front of the Gap. It's like, it just doesn't happen. But Google, there's a fascination with this. And so, yeah, people from out of town do want to go see these places. And literally hundreds of people a day will go to the Google Android sculpture. Hundreds of people a day will go to the Facebook sign on the peninsula. And there are people from around the world that will literally come to the Bay Area and drive all the way from San Francisco. And for those who don't really know the geography of the Bay Area, it's not close to San Francisco. You got to hoof it down.
Depending on the time of day.
Yeah,
yeah, that's true.
And then get caught up in that horrible traffic on Shoreline. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. 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 I always love it when people talked about San Francisco being the Silicon Valley. I'm like, you know, it's a peninsula, right? It's not a valley.
Yeah.
do you think that people are visiting Google and like they're not visiting Cisco so much because we have like one ping pong table in one of the buildings, you know, but Google has like people riding around on Segways and bikes and, you know, they have slides and random, you know, do you think that's some of the draw?
It is part of the allure. And it, though, you know, if you watch the movie, The Intern, which is a great movie. I recommend anyone pick that up on Netflix.
Or I disagree. Horrible movie. Go ahead.
That if you walk into the Google campus, it is almost exactly the way they portrayed in the film. There are people riding around the Google bikes, a whole bunch of people just sort of lounging about and chatting at any time of the day. And you're wondering, are any of these people actually getting any work done? I'm not totally sure.
So when I worked at Microsoft, which was not far from the Google campus, one of the things I like to do is walk over to the Google campus and get on one of their bikes and ride it around.
Very nice. I saw a homeless person on a Google bike.
That's what they should be used for.
They were just driving down Sunnyvale. I'm like, how'd you get all the way from Mountain View to Sunnyvale on a Google bike? I guess, you know.
They should open their cafeteria doors for them too.
Yeah.
How do we get those Google bikes to generate power and broadband? That's
a great thought, right? Just put a generator on the Google bike. And
see, there's a Google Tesla partnership in there somewhere.
Something like that, yeah.
If they weren't competitors now for self-driving cars.
Okay, so did any of you ever, like in your time off or vacation time, you know, just go to check out the campuses of these places? Just for kind of fun or thrills, not for work.
I have not. The closest I got was doing, you know, tech field days and we would be taken around to them, but it wasn't for fun really. I mean, I guess it was fun, but it wasn't for fun.
Yeah. Years ago I did.
Yeah. You know, I just have like a friend over there and he's like, hey, you want to come over for lunch? Okay. Which building? I'm in building 1500. I'm like, what? How many buildings are there?
I don't know if they still make these maps or not, but they used to make and sell these maps at Fry's and, you know, to show where all the companies are. I remember once coming out here and just driving around, you know. I admit to it. I was that guy.
Well, it's an easy trip for you, though, too, right?
Well, this was when I was living in the Midwest. I was living in Chicago and traveling out here. So I just wanted to see where everything was.
Then we're still judging you, I guess.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Well, for advice for people that are doing the tech tourism thing, it is actually a nice stop off if you're going from San Francisco on your way to Santa Cruz or the whole Monterey Bay. A lot of beautiful hiking up there. You got the redwoods. You can stop by Google, have lunch, and then keep going over the mountains.
Yeah, but don't go to Facebook because Facebook's campus is in an awful location.
Yeah, it's not. I don't think it's that interesting. Yeah, you know who has a nice VMware has a very nice campus.
They do. VMware has a nice campus, and most people don't want to go there. You know who's got a lousy campus is Apple. Apple's a terrible campus.
Oh, that main one? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's awful. You really like docks.
But, you know, maybe when
it's
they.
It's not really a campus. It's a big building. It's not really a campus.
Yeah, what were you going to say, Lauren?
On the VMware note, if you're just really into ducks, then maybe you go there.
Oh, they have ducks.
You know, they have the duck pond.
Oh, yeah. They have a nice
and
running
path. Everyone talks about it.
I haven't seen the duck pond. Where is that?
I have no idea. I mean, I don't care about ducks, but everyone I know talks about
That's
the good. Ducks.
That's so nice of you. I love the fact you don't care about them, but just in case people do, you're kind That's enough right. to give them that piece of advice.
It's that Midwest politeness.
I do believe we've crushed this one badly enough. Let's just give IBM a couple of sentences. They posted decent numbers. And it's mostly their cloud business, and it looks like a rise in their analytics business. Their hardware business is off. Any surprises here, anybody?
No, though people are saying Watson's a thing.
They are. And it appears that they do have some business there.
Yeah.
What was interesting to me is that it looked like their year-to-year cloud business was in the area of $11 billion. You know, little finger in corner of mouth, $11 billion. That's pretty good-sized cloud business.
That's nothing to sneeze at. That's a real cloud. So I don't think they're cooking the books like some other company is when they're reporting their cloud numbers. So those might be real numbers.
They might be real numbers.
We're still trying to figure out how big the cloud is. We don't know how big it is. There's a great quote that I tweeted out not too long ago. We don't know how big the cloud is. We know how loud it is. But we don't know how big it is.
So it seems to me that if that is actually true, if IBM's doing $11 billion in cloud business, that they are severely underrepresenting themselves in all the discussion around cloud. That's a much bigger business than what I would have thought. And they need to be crowing about it a little more. But then IBM doesn't really know how to do that. So,
I mean, do they really need to, though? Because, I mean, this is a lot of what people talk about when these technologies like cloud, you know, they go from being the buzz to being just the plumbing that just happens to run stuff, that the boring stuff that nobody cares about. With companies like IBM that don't crow, that's when they become really huge. That's when they take off. That's when they become just part of the natural enterprise ecosystem. And, you know, these numbers that start getting reported instead of the hundreds of millions start getting reported into the multiple billions.
Yeah, so that is interesting. And I wonder how much of it runs on their own large mainframe systems. Because their mainframe systems business is off, way off. Their hardware business is cratering. Cloud and analytics are going up. All right, enough about that. So we'll move into hot or not. And this week's hot or not is strollers with generators built in so you can charge your devices while you're pushing the pram around the block. Did you guys get a chance to read the article about what these things are and do you know how much they'll charge and all that stuff?
Like charges and cost or charges in charging your phone?
Charging your phone.
I see this as like a million other use cases other than playing Pokemon Go, like charging your phone for every other reason why a person who has a child in a stroller would need to charge their phone other than playing Pokemon Go. Because I think this, like the case that it's in, can you even see anything in this case while it's charging? Or is it just you charge it and then you can whip it out and then, you know, play your Pokemon Go when you're ready?
I don't know. Or does the child, if the child's old enough, you know, will the device actually unpower so the child cries and then you have to like run along with the stroller, you know, to power up the device again? Lauren, do you see any use cases for this that are interesting?
Sure. I guess it's good to have a charged phone when you're, you know, a single person walking their child and something bad were to happen or something like that. I myself have been very accident prone throughout my life. And if cell phones had existed, that probably would have been a good thing. But yeah, the Pokemon Go thing I think is ridiculous, and probably parents walking their children should not be playing that game near the street or anything like that. You know, I think it's just another thing. I just don't care about it that much. So I'm going to say it's a good thing to have. Whether it's hot or not, I guess I'm kind of neutral.
You don't think strollers with charging is hot?
I mean, you could have a Mophie or any other device that fits in there too, you know, like.
What if it was like a scooter, you know, like a Razor scooter that you rode around on? What if that had a little generator? Would that be hot?
I think if it was a jogging stroller, that would actually generate some juice. And you're listening to your whatever, you're listening to a podcast, of course, because, you know, that's what you do when you're running. And it's really charging and you're getting some resistance too. So it's part of the workout, you know, cause there's that motor that's going to, you know, that's giving a little bit of resistance and charging your phone up. And then once you get to where you're going to, you don't have your phone totally drained because you're using GPS plus, you know, your Bluetooth headset plus, your MP3 player that's built into your phone. There's my use case right there. But just strolling around the park, you're not going to get any juice out of this thing.
You know what
I'm saying? Not hot. At all.
You're saying not hot.
Not even close.
You guys are both not hot?
I think it would be hotter to just work on battery technology and make the battery better.
Oh, man.
Mark, where do you stand on this?
Yeah, Mark, what's are you hot or not on this, Mark?
You know, I'm going to take off where you left it, but I'm going to go somewhere else. So what you want to do is you want to pile something into the stroller besides a child. right? And maybe it's weights or something else, or maybe, you know, books are taken back to the library or something. I just want to turn in like Beers. The grocery cart, man. Yeah. I want to take this and extend it to a grocery cart in a store. So, I mean, where's the one place that you always like run out of phone juice? And it's like the store, right? And so, you know, you know, your spouse wants to call you and tell you that you need to pick up eggs or milk or cottage cheese or whatever, right? And your phone's out of juice. You know, how frustrating is that? So what I'd like to see is carts for grocery stores that have the chargers built in, but then I want to see treadmills that you can walk on the cart with. So you actually don't go anywhere, but you're pushing the cart on the treadmill. That's hot. I think that's really super hot.
I see that actually. I like where you're going, Mark, but I'm going to take it one step further. And if you had wireless charging built into phones and all of these devices, this is in, you know, the IoT realm, I think we're starting to tread into there. And you would just go seamlessly to the treadmill, to the grocery store, you know, walking the baby, and your phone would just charge as long as you'd paired it, you know, with that particular type of device. It would just automatically pick it up and just start charging wherever you are. And then you wouldn't have to worry about, you know, connecting it to anything.
Yeah, you see, I'm
on board with that.
Yeah, I could see, you know, the calling IoT something else would be Internet of Treadmills, right? You just go somewhere and there's a treadmill you charge up on and lose weight, right? Because they think about, you know.
And that powers all the Internet, the Internet of Treadmills to power.
Because we want to power the Internet with our own fat, right? And so you want to get out there and do something. Maybe there's a way to, you know, put energy back into the Internet by hitting a treadmill at a grocery store.
Hey, I'm going to throw that right back to the Pokemon story.
Or maybe just
how can Pokemon Go players put power back into the grid?
Maybe somehow just the electrical impulses in our own bodies, and it would just burn the fat directly. Like, we don't even have to get on a treadmill. It just starts burning our fat.
Are we going to put them in our arms so we can have arms in our arms?
I like where this is going. Like, I just burned 1,200 calories by charging
my phone. I know what my next VC funding will be towards.
Dude, now you made it big in Arm Holdings. Start it up.
Bio Internet Energy Transfer.
Yeah. Malhoit and Associates VC Fund. Let's kick this off as a first venture.
That's right. Let's get this started. And I think with that, we've just about cooked this show. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Lauren. Thanks, Yadin. It's been great having you.
Had a great time.
Thank you, Mark.